Fab Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Bob Brenly is going to be with us on today's show. Very much looking forward to BB, the Diamondbacks' only World Series championship, the manager of that squad, and of course, Diamondbacks color analyst. Bob Brenly is always very straightforward. There is no sugarcoating. There is no BS. There is no, I'm going to say a whole bunch of things that are pre-scripted by some marketing people within our organization. Not that the Diamondbacks do that, but some sports franchises have all their talking points and their analysts never say anything remotely interesting other than go team and let's sell tickets, even if we stink. So I'm very pleased to have Bob Brenly come on the show. Today's his birthday, too, and he's making the time, so very nice of him. One of the more talented writers I've ever come across and very much enjoy reading is Norm Fraunheim. Norm Fraunheim is one of those great treasures, I like to say, in our industry that has slowly eroded away from content to chasing a bunch of clicks and writing cotton candy, which is really a bunch of nothing. And when Norm Fraunheim used to write for the Arizona Republic, he was a must-read, in my opinion. He was just one of these guys that was so plugged in on so many fronts, and very thoughtful and just a talented writer. Norm, one of his passions is boxing, and he's been very much following what's gone on with Pacquiao and Mayweather Jr., and the fight is now in place. That fight, they're commanding $250,000 to sit ringside in May. And with boxing a big deal here in Arizona, it is. It's a big subculture here in Arizona. And as close as we are to Vegas, it's, I think, time to, because I've got a lot of questions around the fight, so I want to talk some boxing and the whole Mayweather-Pacquiao deal with Norm Fraunheim. He'll join us later in the show, one of the best in the business, with 15rounds.com. He also contributes to the Ring magazine. So we'll talk with Norm about some stuff on my mind. I'm not really quite sure, once again, where to start. Yesterday, I didn't want to go down the path of the Suns, and I ended up having to just hammer them because it was just pathetic what happened. They played tonight. There's some other things I think they're pretty interesting. Peter King has his first mock draft up. Of course, Peter is a regular part of Sports360AZ.com. I didn't want to bring him on today to go through his mock, but he's got something interesting on that front. We'll get to court storming, a black day in Chicago. LeBron James kid is already getting recruited, and he's 10. It's just silly. So let's get you caught up. Some things on my mind in the world of sports. Bob Brenly in about 10, 12 minutes. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. I was on the phone yesterday with the folks at the Honda Resort and Casino, and they were talking about how, yep, snow's fallen. And, of course, the Sunrise Ski Resort, what a great place to head up to. This could be the last big snow of the year, though. You don't know. So with snow falling at sunrise, what the perfect time. Here we are on a Wednesday. Make your plans to head up to the Honda Resort and Casino. Stay at the casino. Have some great entertainment to check out. Eat some great food. Pull down on the slots. And then head over to the Sunrise Ski Resort. You can get all your ski equipment at the ski shop right there at the Honda Resort and Casino, right? And then head to Sunrise. Have some fun, make it a day, and then head back that night. Warm up by the fire, eat some food, have some fun, stay there at the Honda Resort and Casino, bounce back into the valley or wherever you're taking us in, and be all rested and relaxed at the Honda Resort and Casino, Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. Yesterday, Eric and I went over to the Cardinals after the show was done. It already was out that Bruce Arians and Steve Keim were getting contract extensions. But it was interesting to see the two of them and how well they worked together, how in concert they worked together. I bring this up because I think that as we've seen with other franchises here in the Valley, there's been a level of dysfunctionality. I'm not a fan at all of what's going on down at the Suns, where someone above Ryan McDonough, in this case it's Lon Babby, talks entirely too much, is out there entirely too much, maybe the nicest guy in the world, I don't know, but the team's going nowhere fast. The Diamondbacks have blown through a lot of general managers and have blown through a lot of front office executives and have blown through just a lot of people. The amount of checks, if Ken Kendrick, if I were to add up all the checks of just front office people and managers and all that stuff that he's gone through, it'd be a lot. So the Diamondbacks have yet to prove, although you bring Tony La Russa in and it's great to see, but you got to let it play out. You know, I can't sit here less than a year into the La Russa regime and Dave Stewart and say, oh, they've got it figured out. I don't know that. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. On the surface, it may look like, what an ideal marriage. Well, this is great. I don't think anybody had an idea as to how it would go with Steve Keim and Bruce Arians. But there's no question they're the most functional front office and coach working hand in hand. I do believe that Don Maloney and Dave Tippett have had great synergy. I just think they're trying to win a sword fight with a piece of spaghetti over there in Glendale. And so they're going to get their heads kicked in like they did last night. I'm watching Keim and I'm watching Arians yesterday, and I don't sense there's very much scripting at all that's sent down there. There's some. There's always going to be some. You know, Eric, I'll joke with Eric about how you can count on certain things with the Cardinals that they're going to talk about University of Phoenix Stadium, which I didn't hear that mentioned yesterday. I was surprised by that. They're going to talk about how great the fans are at every corner and every turn. I did hear some of that yesterday. It's fine. It's marketing, whatever. And facts are that they're competent at what they're doing in the front office. So whenever you have to go backwards to talk about the place you play in or acknowledge your fans when you stink, I don't think is any, it's not worth my time. It just isn't. These two, though, this is the best front office working combination that I've seen. It truly is out of that organization. I'm not going to sit here today and say they're better than the Suns back in the early 90s. Different sport, different cap, different amount of players. You know, I'm not going to say they're better than the Diamondbacks front office and how that went when they won a World Series. I think that's just silly. Here is Steve Keim, though, and I like Steve as a person very much. And I like his football acumen a great deal as well. Here is, and we'll go to number two, Eric, Steve Keim. There is clear job definition in the Cardinals organization. This is good for you fans to hear from the front office.
I think it starts with respect. And I think after you get past the respect factor, I think it's having clearly defined roles. And when I say clearly defined roles, we stay in our lane. He does his job, I do mine. And when you don't cross those lines, they don't get blurred. And around the league, when you see those lines get blurred, internal dysfunction follows.
That's strong. That's just really strong. Because on one hand, he could be sitting there saying that, and Bruce Arians could be thinking, well, yeah, I'll stay in my lane until I need a wide receiver, or I need a this, or I need a that. Thing is, Steve Keim has provided him. Need a wide receiver? We'll go out and we'll get Jerron Brown. We'll get John Brown. I did my job. You do yours. And he did. Ted Ginn was a disappointment. Happens in free agency. Jerron Brown emerged as somebody that could help them on special teams along with John Brown. So you look at the strengths of the two that general manager provides the players, I'm sure with input from Arians, has to be input from Arians, but there's none of this dysfunctionality that we see with other organizations where they can't stay out of one another's way. You know, I'll use the Dallas Cowboys as an example. And the Cowboy fans will say, yeah, well, we made it this year to the playoffs. Yeah, finally, after years and years and years and years and years and years of ineptitude. The Green Bay Packers, I think, have a very, very good organization. That team, that franchise, for whatever reason, is able to work hand in hand, and you don't see much slippage at all. The organizations where there's front office that's being meddled with by ownership, that's being meddled with by head coach, I think up at San Francisco, there was probably a little bit of that, and they said, we're going to win out over the head coach. So Jim Harbaugh's no longer there. In Seattle, it's pretty clear that coach works out pretty well with the front office of the Seahawks, and that's why they've been able to build a solid foundation and franchise. What I liked even better about Steve Keim is, I don't like it when guys point out to look at me and look at what we've done. Instead of that, Keim yesterday said that he and Arians still have plenty of work to do.
I can tell you right now, he and I aren't satisfied. You know, we've won 10 games, 11 games. All that says to me is we made some improvements. But now is not the time to pat ourselves on the back. You know, we got to roll up our sleeves and get to work, and we got to continue to improve this roster. And I know in my heart that we got the best coach in the National Football League. So once we can continue to grow and develop this roster, we're just going to get better and better.
That's good stuff there. A couple other NFL things. Then we're going to go to Sean Miller before Bob Brenly. Peter King wrote today his first mock draft. Now, We obviously have a great deal of respect for Peter. He is a weekly guest of ours, a weekly insider with us during the football season. And even in the off season, Peter will join us, already has joined us with the Monday Morning Quarterback. So today, when a guy like Peter King releases his mock draft, it tells me that he's sat with enough executives, put things together. He only went through the top 15 picks. Yes, Jameis Winston going number one, that's fine. I mean, you can go a lot of different directions on that. But Peter did have one nugget, and that is that he believes that the Eagles will try to trade up with Washington at number six for Marcus Mariota. Now, the average fan would say on the surface, why would Washington trade within their own division to try to strengthen somebody else rather than block? I don't know. Donovan McNabb ended up in the same division too. So let's just put that over to the side. If you offer enough assets and Washington feels as though they can improve themselves by trading with Philadelphia, I don't see that as a factor. That's just my own opinion. Marcus Mariota going to the Philadelphia Eagles would be very interesting. Of course, with the Cardinals, I'm paying attention to all the NFC stuff. Yeah, I'll pay attention to the AFC, but by and large with this show, because we are so Arizona-centric, I like to see what's going on in the NFC. That was interesting. Over on the basketball front, so we had another court storming last night. Maryland beat Wisconsin, and the fans rushed the court. We talked yesterday about the Kansas State, Kansas debacle, fiasco, whatever it was. K-State has since apologized, said that they didn't do enough on a security front. Well, Sean Miller weighed in on this, and we'll hear from him a little bit later on in the show on court storming, and I think you'll find his comments to be really interesting. He suggests that the host school be fined $100,000. Okay. The last time that I can recall a court storming in Tucson would probably be like, I don't know, whenever they beat UCLA down there during the course of a big game, big season. I can't recall it. I saw a note this morning, I think it was Steve Rivera, that the last six road losses, teams have stormed the court on Arizona. You don't storm the court if you're in Tucson and you beat up ASU like they did in January. In Tempe, you storm the court when you beat U of A because you just don't do it that often or on a regular basis. Last few years aside, all right, but let's just look at facts. Through the years, ASU typically gets run over. This isn't me banging on ASU, but it sounds to me like Sean Miller takes a little swipe at ASU. We'll hear him on that a little bit later on. By the way, can you believe what's gone on in Chicago today? I mean, look, Derrick Rose injures his knee again. He's played 85 games in the last four seasons. That's it. 85 games in the last four seasons, and now he's out again with a torn meniscus in his right knee. When you have a body part and it breaks down repeatedly, Bill Walton had foot injuries that I saw through the years being out in San Diego, even when he was with Boston. I know Bill well. Penny Hardaway had his knee issues, of course, when he was in Orlando and then came over here to the Suns. But Derrick Rose is done, I think. We got to talk about that. And not only did they lose Derrick Rose in Chicago last night, they lose Patrick Kane on the hockey team for the Blackhawks 6 to 10 weeks. That'd be akin to, like, here in town, the Suns on one night would lose Bledsoe and the Coyotes would lose Shane Doan all on the same night. It's crazy. LeBron James Jr. already getting attention from colleges and he's 10. Talk about that a little bit later on. We'll hear from Sean Miller later on. But up next, we turn the page over to baseball. The Diamondbacks opening up spring training, the best in the business, in my opinion. Diamondbacks analyst Bob Brenly, former World Series winning manager. On the other side, I'm Brad Sussman.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Back on the show, Sports360AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, across the Fruited Plain. Brad Sussmath with you, even on his birthday. Bob Brenly, I'm hoping he's out at a fishing hole somewhere. That would only be appropriate for him, but on his birthday, he joins us for a couple of minutes. Talk about the team opening up over at Salt River Fields, longtime Diamondback analyst and, of course, World Series winning manager. Happy birthday. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brad. Thank you for the birthday wishes. And I'm not fishing yet, but I hope to later on.
That's what I like to hear. Do you still have your favorite fishing hole by the airport? Not that I'm giving away secrets.
You know, I haven't been down there for years and years. I'm not even sure if that's still down there. We knew a gentleman that owned that piece of property, and used to sneak down there and do a little fishing in spring training, but haven't been over there in years. I think that was the place where Deion Sanders got arrested several years ago, fishing illegally without a license or something.
You would never do that, would you?
No. I mean, you know, now with the internet, even when we travel on the roads, you can get a day fishing license online just about to any city or state that we travel to. So, it's no problem anymore.
I like that. I won't ask you your favorite fishing hole. I do want to ask you about your approach to this season as a broadcaster. I'm just wondering, is it a big notebook you carry around in spring training? Because there's so many new faces top to bottom throughout the organization. How do you prepare and approach this season, Bob?
Well, I'm a big believer, based on my experience, of a wait-and-see attitude. You know, obviously, we try to get over there in spring training and see the guys, especially the guys that maybe we're not as familiar with, watch their workouts, try to get a feel for the pitches that the pitcher throws or the strengths and weaknesses of a hitter or a defender. But most of that stuff you just kind of garner hanging around the batting cage and watching the inner squad games early in spring training and then later on the competitive games against other teams. Rather than prejudge guys or put labels on guys or say he's a can't miss or he's a non-prospect, I just like to go out and watch him play the game, because sometimes guys that find themselves on that no prospect list come in and have a great spring training and just seem to take it to the next level. And guys that you're counting heavily on to go out there and do big things, maybe don't do that. So, you know, rather than try to predict, which is impossible in this game, I prefer to just observe and kind of put it together in my own mind so that when the regular season starts, I have an idea of how it all fits together.
There are teams, though, that if they've won 90-plus, they've been in the postseason the year before, you kind of know what you've got to work with, right? I mean, it's not – in the case of this squad, 69 wins or whatever it was last season, it's completely different in terms of preparation, or is it all the same?
Well, I mean, you know, certain basic preparation is all the same. I mean, you could put on generic uniforms that had no logos or any indication of what organization it was and put them on a spring training field, and you're going to hear a lot of the same things. You're going to see a lot of the same drills. An emphasis on the same fundamentals. I mean, there are certain things about this game that are just never going to change. And I think that's right where we're at now in spring training. The pitchers and catchers have been going for a week, and now the full squads are starting to show up. And whether you go to the Brewers camp or the Diamondbacks camp or the Rockies camp or the A's camp, you're probably going to see them doing a lot of the same things in the early part of spring training. A lot of people, and rightfully so, get jazzed up for spring training to start. But, until the games actually get going, it's a lot of mundane drills, which are very, very important. If you're going to have a good ball club, you have to execute the fundamentals well. But for the players themselves, they're anxious to get to the games.
Bob Brenly with Brad Susmat. Okay, of the current players that you're familiar with on the Diamondbacks, who are you most looking forward to seeing in spring training, the guys that you saw last year?
Well, I'm always looking forward to see Paul Goldschmidt. I've said it repeatedly on the air. I've said it to anybody who will listen to me. If this guy was playing in a major market, if he was in New York or Chicago or L.A., he quite possibly could be the face of Major League Baseball. He's that good a player. He's that good of a teammate, and he's that good of a person. And, as far as I'm concerned, he's the man. He's the guy that I will go to see every day. Spring training, regular season, workouts in the off season. Goldie's a guy that you hope your son grows up to be like him. So he's always at the top of the list. But with some of the changes made in the off season, Tomas is a guy that's drawing a lot of interest this spring. Will he do enough to make the club as the third baseman? If not, and you move him to the outfield, that causes a chain effect with some guys that figure to be playing in the outfield. So I think the progress of Yasmani Tomas in spring training this year is not only going to affect him and where he plays, but it's going to have a trickle-down effect and affect the entire roster depending on where he ends up. And it's not out of the question, and Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart have kind of hinted at it, that if they feel he needs more seasoning, if he needs more at-bats, more experience at third base, he may end up starting the season in the minor leagues, which would obviously have a big effect on the major league club. So he's a guy that I think that you should probably keep an eye on this spring to see how he develops at third base.
If Moss does play in the outfield, could you see Hill go over to third, Pennington at second, Owings at short, something like that?
Well, that's certainly a possibility, and Nick Ahmed figures into that mix, too, as a shortstop, and Chris Owings sliding over to second base. Cliff Pennington, for me, is really, really valuable as a utility guy. He'll get his share of starts this year at second, at short, and at third. I don't know, perhaps at this juncture, if the ball club views him as an everyday guy. Certainly when he's had opportunities to play over stretches, he's done very, very well. But I think the way the club is configured, they probably view him more as a super utility guy that they could play at multiple positions. But, like I said before, the Tomas thing at third base or left field or wherever he ends up, will sometimes have a determining factor on other players around the field and where they end up.
Staying on the field, what did you make out of Montero being moved and the catching situation? Tuffy's the guy, but they're really high on what's behind him.
Well, first of all, a big tip of the cap to Miguel Montero. He was a big part of this organization and everything they've been able to accomplish over the years. And, Miggy, high energy guy, great teammate, everybody loved him. But, the economics of the game sometimes prohibits you from bringing everybody back just because you like them. And when the Diamondbacks sat down and figured out how their money would be best spent, I think they felt like they could move forward without Miggy. I'm not so sure that we're done moving at that position. I'm comfortable myself with Tuffy Gosiewicz, a superior defensive catcher behind the plate. And my feelings about that. I've always been a defense-first guy behind the plate, and certainly Tuffy brings plenty of that. So, if you get enough offense from other positions on the field, Tuffy's your guy behind the plate. I know he'll do a great job handling the pitching staff and doing the things he needs to do defensively. If there's a catcher out there available as we move into spring training and somebody finds himself with a surplus of catchers and the Diamondbacks feel the guy is a good fit financially and as a teammate, then we may see somebody come in later on in spring training. But as the season starts, I think they're content with Tuffy.
One last question on position players, Bob, and that is, what do you make out of Trumbo based on what you saw last season? And let's assume Tomas does make the lineup here and Goldschmidt is back healthy. Is Trumbo your four? Is he in the middle of your lineup? What is he capable of doing?
Well, a lot of that depends on what Tomas is available or can do as well. The thing about Mark Trumbo, and we talked about this on the air last year at times, you'd like to put Trumbo and Goldie back-to-back in some order in the middle of that lineup, but Mark Trumbo is a strikeout candidate. He might hit the ball 600 feet, but he could possibly swing and miss three times. So the idea of protection in the lineup is maybe a little bit overrated, but you'd like to have somebody behind Goldie that's going to force the opposing team to work hard to pitch to them. Guys that maybe will take a walk, keep that on-base percentage up there, move Goldie into scoring position with a walk or a single, or hit a ball in the gap, and with the way Goldie runs the bases, he could possibly score from first on an extra base hit. I'm not so sure who that guy is right now. Like I said, Mark Trumbo does strike out a lot. If I was an opposing team and had a choice of pitching to Goldie or Mark, I'm probably going to pitch around Goldie and go after Mark Trumbo until he proves me wrong. So whoever it is behind Goldie in that lineup, you'd like to think it's the guy that's going to put the ball in play with authority from time to time, and be certainly not an equal threat to Paul Goldschmidt, but somebody who could do damage behind Goldie in that lineup.
Bob Brenly with us. If you go over to the pitching side, I'm not going to go through each scenario, but just big picture, first with the rotation and then switch over to the bullpen. What is it you want to see or need to see? Is so much of it the uncertainty because of the players coming off of injury just with the starting rotation?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the candidates for the rotation, and there's no clear number one or even possibly a number two starter. Once the season develops and we get a little deeper into spring training and roll around to opening day, somebody may emerge as a top of the rotation guy. And there are a couple of guys I think are capable of doing that, but based on their track records and what you project from guys, I don't see a legitimate number one or number two. Now, somebody's going to have to pitch in those spots in the rotation. And when you think about the number one and two pitchers, even in the National League West that you're going to bump up against, that could be tough when you're facing the Clayton Kershaws and the Madison Bumgarner and Tyson Ross and James Shields down in San Diego, whoever the number one and two happen to be. I don't know right now that we have guys to match up with number ones and number twos around baseball. So, you know, I guess you have to hope your offense shows up a little bit on those days and does something against the other team's ace. And then hope that the back end of your rotation is stronger than the back end of other teams' rotation. You know, kind of work it in reverse. Most teams feel very good about their number one, two, three guy, maybe not so much about their four and five. But if the Diamondbacks had a strong three, four, five, you know, maybe you steal those games away in a series and battle as best you can against the number one and two.
Addison Reed last year was hit and miss, I thought, but, you know, 25 saves or 25 saves. Do you look at the bullpen with his situation as you feel really good about it, or does he still need to show you something? Because there were the times that things didn't go right.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing with Addison Reed was command. His stuff was good enough, and certainly he's proved that already in his young career, that his stuff is good enough to be a closer, and he's put up big closer numbers in the past. But there were occasions last year when it seemed like every fastball was right down the middle of the plate and every slider was hanging over the inside part of the plate. If his command returns to where it was before when he was with the White Sox, and even early on in his Diamondbacks career, I thought his command was better. But at times he threw a lot of pitches right down the middle of the plate, and as this game will get you, a lot of those balls got hit out of the park, not just put into play, not just the base hit the left field. They got hit up into the seats. And that's something, obviously, right, as a closer, you got to keep the ball in the ballpark. So hopefully his command will improve this year and allow him to keep that ball out of the middle of the plate more regularly.
Two other questions for Bob Renly. We'll let him go on his birthday. We appreciate his time. Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports. What can you say about Chip Hale for the fans to understand him as a manager coming into the Diamondbacks?
Well, the word I keep using is energy. I mean, I've known Chip for a long time. He was a member of the Diamondbacks minor league staff when I was managing, and he brings it every day. I mean, this guy hits the ground running every morning, and he will go as long and as hard as necessary to get the job done. And I think just spending a couple of minutes around him, whether interviewing him or just talking to him around the batting cage or his interaction with the players, I think that really comes across. And this is a game of endurance, you know, 162 games spread out over 6 months. And it really helps to have that inbred energy every day. And I've known Chip for a long time, like I said, and he brings it every day. And I think that's going to be very important, not only for his own sanity, but, you know, certainly to keep the team pushing, because there'll be a lot of stretches this season where it gets very, very tough to go out there and compete. And if you've got a manager that keeps that positive attitude and keeps that energy level up there where it needs to be, I think that's half the battle.
Before I let you go, pace of game policy. Now, is this something that we hear a lot? Guys like me sit around and talk about, and in April and early May, it's enforced, and then we just go back to the way it was? Or do you really believe that hitters roaming around the box are trying to change the habits of hitters and warnings and fines, Bob, that this is actually going to change the game for the positive? What do you make out of the pace of game policy?
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of watching guys adjust their batting gloves. I'm not a big fan of watching pitchers rub up a brand-new baseball that's already been rubbed up by the umpires. It just seems like a lot of the things that we accept in the game now as just part of a guy's routine have gotten longer and longer and more involved. And any event that you go to, you want to see what you came to see. And I don't think most people come to see guys fix their batting gloves and, you know, go through their pre-swing and pre-pitch routines that take, you know, 45 seconds before they're ready to get up on the mound and throw another pitch or get in the batter's box and take another swing. You know, when you were a kid, you didn't do that. When you played Little League, I guarantee you these guys never got out of the batter's box. They couldn't wait for that next pitch to come in there so they could swing at it and hopefully make something happen. And somewhere along the line, guys got too much into their own heads and into their own routines that they became these long, boring things that fans are just sitting there waiting for something to happen. So, you know, hopefully this will make a difference. I think we're going to have some issues because of enforcement of the new rules, very much a gray area for the umpires. I'm sure some guys are going to be sticklers for the new times, and I'm sure other guys are going to let things slide a little bit. The umpires, you know, they're all individuals too, but the bottom line is we want to see players playing baseball, not goofing around with their batting gloves or fixing their hats or tying their shoes. Let's go. Let's get out there. Let's play baseball.
Mm. So you do think this is good. It's just the enforcement of it will be interesting to see.
Yeah, and you know, I applaud Major League Baseball for their efforts to move ahead. You know, the instant replay last year, I've been an advocate of that for years. You know, we have the technology now to look at these plays and get them right, and I think that's been a huge success. I like the idea we've eliminated the manager going out there and stalling. That was another thing. What are we watching? Well, we're watching a manager stand next to an umpire while they're both waiting for the video guy to see if it's worth appealing or not. Let's eliminate that. Let's keep the game moving as much as we can and keep making changes wherever we can to improve our game to a new generation of fans.
Enjoy your birthday. Appreciate the time as always, Bob. Thank you.
All right, Brad. Always a pleasure.
You got it. Bob Brenly for a couple of minutes. Diamondback analyst, World Series winning manager of your Arizona Diamondbacks. That is a lot of good stuff right there. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. The Diamondbacks full squad now is in at Salt River Fields. Baseball season is here. A lot of fun on that front. Of course, during the baseball season, we will have Pedro Gomez with us as our baseball insider with ESPN every week. Have a lot of fun on that front. On the other side, so LeBron James's 10-year-old son is getting recruiting letters. I mean, you can't script this stuff. And in about 25 minutes, Norm Fraunheim, the best in boxing in Arizona, on Pacquiao Mayweather. That's straight ahead on a Wednesday. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussman. It's a good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. What a great day. It's this weekend. It's supposed to be cold, like in the 50s this weekend here in the valley. Across the state, there's some snow going on up at Pine Top, which is great. Get out there and ski over at the Honda Resort and Casino. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports, we partner, as always, appreciate the partnership with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Eric, were you tuned in the whole time on Bob Brenly? Were you messing around?
Oh, no.
Checking him out?
No, yeah. He went through the checklist. You start at the top and sort of just worked your way through the revamped front office, the questions with the starting pitching, the questions with the back end of the bullpen, the questions with Tomas. What I'm sensing is there are a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
And not a lot of answers. So
Yeah, it's fine. Did you see the LeBron James Jr. story?
Of course.
Did you hear about this?
I did.
Yeah. So how do I put this? This is not, I'm not gonna pound on that culture of AAU ball. I have a 10-year-old son who's playing club ball right now, and he's in the AAU circuit and all that stuff here in Arizona. LeBron James Jr. is already showing signs of following in his father's phenomenal footsteps. He led an AAU national championship team out and was really, really good on the court. Problem is, he's only in fourth grade, not even in middle school yet. And some college coaches are already sending letters to LeBron James about his son, who's a fourth grader. Ohio State coach Thad Matta has already said the younger James will be on his radar for recruiting. Now, there's a few ways to look at this. I can tell you that as I'm out watching games now, and part of my love of the thing with all my kids, and I've coached my oldest son in basketball, coached my daughters in basketball, and soccer, and they're in club swim and club volleyball. The cool thing about being in club sports and being involved on all those fronts is you do get to see kids early on. Like Eric, we've been together off and on for 20 years, and I'll come in on a Monday with you. It doesn't matter if it was way long ago. I would come in and say, I saw this kid over the weekend. And you'd be like, huh, what? And that's what's so cool about this. So on one sense, I don't think it's that sleazy. You know, those kids are out there. On the other hand, it's, I don't think doing the stories on them, I'm not big on that. I'm not big on, and we have people pitch us, or I've had people pitch me on stories on their kid that are fourth, fifth, sixth graders. what's the difference between LeBron James' son at 10 years of age and a junior golfer or a junior tennis player who's 10 years of age? Just last weekend, we did a terrific piece on a high school golfer over at Hamilton High School who won the Symetra tournament over at Longbow. And a lot of people read it and checked out the content because there is interest in that. Now, doing a piece on LeBron James's 10-year-old, on one hand, just screams out loud, we're chasing clicks because we know people are going to read that. On the other hand, it is interesting. And you see the video of the kid and it's, wow, he is really good. So I guess there's a fine line here on it. And of course, it's LeBron James's son. So people are going to come after him. I'm surprised he didn't get a recruiting letter when the child came out of the womb. You know, it's just the way it is. If it's LeBron James has kids, you're probably going to want to see how those kids turn out. Unfair to those kids. Unfair to those kids. But you'll want to see how it turns out. Norm Frohnheim's going to be with us in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about Pacquiao and Mayweather. Let me switch back over to Sean Miller. So Sean Miller doesn't have much experience of court storming in Tucson. In fact, they've never stormed the court since he's been the head coach in Tucson. It's just a way of life. You expect to go take care of business. There's no reason to storm the court. But in their last six games that they have lost on the road, all six times the teams have stormed the court. We're happy we beat the U of A. I get it. They're very, very good in basketball. Here is Sean Miller when asked, strong stuff here. Here is Sean Miller who went through a court storming a couple weeks ago in Tempe when Arizona State beat the U of A.
It's really, to me, unnecessary in many ways. If you think about it, there's only one thing that can happen, and that's bad. What's the good? That they stormed the court. I can name a lot of bad. I don't look at it as being necessary, but maybe that's because I'm not going to watch anyone storm the court at McHale.
Okay, so very straightforward. We're not doing that. We don't need to do that. And he's right. Here's more Sean Miller. Emotions always run high after a game.
I mean, some of the things that are said, you know, it's just, you know, it's offensive. Your natural reaction is to want to punch them. You know, you can't do that, but it happens fast. There's a ton of emotion. You have all of the makings of a disaster, and it's up to you to show amazing restraint.
It's a disservice to sportsmanship, he believes, in storming the court.
I think part of this court storming that's lost in the shuffle as well is if many times, you know, you talk about you have to be a good sport and everyone focuses if you lose, but yet if you win, you know, you can just act like a complete ass. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but if you just say to yourself, does the winning team shake the losing team's hand? It just fundamentally, there's so many things that are wrong with it.
So what is the solution on this? And he's going down the path of the school that is the home team gets a six-figure fine.
I would probably be in a long line of coaches saying they're that if you imposed a fine on that institution, that I would be willing to bet you that there would be no court storming or it would be much different.
Okay, so here's the thing on this. He makes valid points all over the place. Eric, you heard this. Is the one where he said it's a disservice to sportsmanship, was he taking aim at Arizona State?
No,
and not
no, I don't think so. Okay. I think the one there he was taking a shot at ASU was the one that basically said, We don't storm the court here at McHale Center. And if you're referencing the last time that U of A had the court stormed, that was a few weeks ago at Wells Fargo Arena.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's a rivalry that's never been really much of a rivalry when it comes to ASU on the basketball court. Usually U of A just crushes them. I mean, they just destroyed them down in Tucson. It wasn't even a game. And they came up here, and for the second time in as many years, ASU wins the game. There's not a culture of winning in basketball in Tempe as there is in Tucson. That's just a fact. Anybody wants to dispute me on that, you are way, way, way wearing maroon and gold glasses. And it's getting better. You know, it's nowhere near where it should be. You have a 500 program again this year. So, and that's a fact. Here's the thing on this though, too. Television loves court storming. Television drives sports today as we know it. So these executive producers and producers love seeing college kids just run on the court or run on the field. And somebody is going to get hurt. We mentioned Joe Kay's story yesterday. Go Google it and you'll see what I'm talking about. Joe Kay, it's very simple. And you'll see more court stormings here in the next few weeks. We saw one again last night. The segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Yesterday, I went by Santan Ford. I told you yesterday's show, I'm going to swing by there. Sat in Big Lloyd Kovalt's office for about an hour and talked about what's going on. Lloyd's there doing his business. Some of the other reps I visited with over at Santan Ford and people in their spots and their cubicles, they all want to talk sports. I go over there because I like interacting with them, get a feel about what's going on the dealership. Of course, I'm proud to talk about Santan Ford. I've done so for 3 years. I drive the Ford Fusion. My wife drives certified pre-owned Explorer. It makes a lot of sense for us in the Sesmat household. General Manager Tim Hovick does it right. He's involved civically, corporately, a lot of places, not just in sports. So you add it all up, and I've heard nothing but positive feedback and have people that send me notes. Hey, I need to buy a vehicle. Who do you suggest I talk to over at Santan Ford? Sometimes I'll send it to one person or another. But the bottom line is go to Santan Ford for that car, that truck. When you're in the market for that vehicle, you may be getting up every morning saying, why am I driving this still? And you've got that tax refund check. Now is the time to pull it off. At Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Norm Fraunheim on the other side, one of the best in the business, in my opinion, on Pacquiao Mayweather and the build-up to it on May 2nd. This will be the mega sporting event as it gets closer for the year. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat. One of my favorite people in sports through the years in Arizona is Norm Fraunheim. He joined us for a couple of minutes, one of the more talented people that I've come across. He's with The Ring for the upcoming fight with Mayweather and Pacquiao May 2nd at the MGM Grand. It's always good to hear Norm Fraunheim's voice. How are you?
Hey, Brad. How are you? How you been?
Pounding along.
Happy birthday, by the way. Your birthday wasn't Tuesday. That was Mayweather's birthday. I know.
Yeah, I don't have quite the decimal point where Mayweather has on the account.
No, who does?
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so are you excited for this fight, or is this a fight that should have happened a long, long time ago, and we're just kind of like, it's fine. Where are you at on Mayweather Pacquiao May 2nd?
Both, actually. I'm more than that. I'm relieved that it's finally happening. It should have happened 5-6 years ago. But boxing was at the point that it needed to prove that it could just do business. And there were some questions about whether it could. So whether this opens the door to, to some further big business, I don't know. Should it have happened? Yeah, absolutely. 5-6 years ago, both of them were definitely in their prime. Now there's certain signs that both of them have declined. Mayweather's not, his feet don't move the way they used to, just move around like the jackrabbit. Pacquiao's power isn't there anymore. He has knocked out anybody since 2009. But it's an event, it's an event that people have been talking about for years. So that means it's going to generate a lot of money on a lot of different levels beyond just the hardcore fight fan.
What is the event, if you were to talk through your years and years of boxing, that you could put on the same level that you think this will approach, the build-up, the hype? Is this a Tyson fight? Is this an Ali fight? Is this something below those two?
I would put it more in the category of Leonard Duran. I think that's the closer parallel in terms of weight class, in terms of interest, kind of good guy, bad guy. Heavyweights are always going to draw. Tyson was a bit of a, that was the accident always waiting to happen. That said, there's been a lot of talk that this is going to be the biggest fight ever, and that's certainly true in terms of revenue. I just did a major piece for The Ring that will appear in another couple of weeks, and my guess is it will generate, and this is on the conservative side, a minimum of $355 million.
Wow.
Duran, Leonard, what would they have done during the era of social media? We can only imagine. But I don't think that this fight alongside the first two Leonard Durant fights, or the Leonard Hearns fight, or Aramis said it has compared it to the 1971 Ollie Frazier fight, the great one at Madison Square Garden. In terms of revenue, he's right, but in terms of real history context of a great fight that people talked about all the time, I don't think you can rate it there.
Norm Frontheim with us, The Ring. Norm, veteran writer here in the Valley and across Arizona, widely regarded, widely respected, talking about it, May 2nd, MGM Grand. It will be Mayweather and Pacquiao. Does boxing have to have a home run off of this? Because the sport is being passed in some people's view by UFC, and there's that whole business angle. Does this have to deliver big?
Yes and no. I don't think it's ever going to completely recover in the United States, but it does extremely well internationally. So I think there will always be an international audience. Mexico is its biggest market these days. There's a huge market in the UK. Actually, the magazine I'm working for now, that's where our largest circulation is in the UK. In fact, I was up in Belfast just being a tourist about 18 months ago, and I saw it on the newsstand there. It circulates pretty well in Germany, where the Klitschko's, where Vladimir Klitschko's a big draw, and it's become a big draw in Moscow and Montreal. But in this country, you're absolutely right. If it hits a home run, I think there will be some interest, because Al Haymon, who is Floyd Mayweather's advisor and kind of a mysterious figure in boxing — there's never been any of those, by the way — has moved to back to free TV. His first NBC series starts on March 7th. So if this is a good fight and the fans like it, then maybe they'll start to watch that free TV.
Good stuff there, Norm. We'll visit as it gets closer. I appreciate the time and the insight, as always. Looking forward to the fight. Good to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. Man, try to make it up there.
I'm gonna. We could relive a Tyson story, diving under a table sometime. We'll have a good time.
That's right. Good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
You too. It was Norm Frontheim. Not to be too inside, Norm and I were doing a Mike Tyson interview and interviewing a limousine driver who was pitching a book. And right in the middle of the interview, these big guys come right in and lift him up off the table and pull him away, never to be seen from again. Norm's under the table. The guy was carrying a gun. I'm like, we're going to a break, and we'll be right back. And it was chaos. But that's boxing. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Again, the fight is on May 2nd, and I'd like to get up there. That'd be a lot of fun. On the other side, we'll reset everything going on a busy Wednesday. Things on my mind around the Valley, around the state. Of course, there's plenty of content that we have up on our site right now. That's at sports360az.com. And we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, on sports360az.com right now. Sports360az.com right now. You can check out my latest 3-Dot Thoughts column. Dan Marley talking about his upcoming schedule with Duke playing GCU, and some thoughts on ASU and U of A basketball, why they're not playing GCU. And also, top flight quarterback recruit who's looking at Northern Arizona University and an ACC school. Remember Connor Brewer? Checking him out. Hour 2's next.